This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio is Philip C, who is beaming at this moment. By the way, it is 7:05, and it's Thursday, December the 30th. One more day to the end of the year.
Yes.
And why are you beaming, Philip?
I'm beaming because I'm so excited. 2022 is going to be an amazing year, Xiaoning.
They said that about 2021, and then what happened?
Well, wasn't it amazing?
Well, I'm not sure about it.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
The center rally continues, with the exception for the tech-heavy Nasdaq, which was down 0.1%. But the Dow and the S&P 500 continued their record, up 0.3% for the Dow, S&P 500 up 0.1%. Over across in Asia, Nikkei was down 0.6%, Hang Seng down 0.8%, Shanghai Composite was down 0.9%. But in Southeast Asia, Singapore STI and FBM KLCI were both up 0.3%.
So for an outlook on markets, we speak to Lee Kian Soon, CEO of Astro Asset Management, joining us from Singapore. Good morning, Kian Soon. Now, technology firms, especially those connected to the semiconductor supply chain, are much loved by investors now. But the sad thing, or the unfortunate thing, is that there are fewer names in Southeast Asia compared to US and China. But are there regional tech names that stand out to you and that we should be on the watch for?
Good morning. If you look at the Asia context, I think North Asia has the likes of Samsung Electronics, TSMC and SMIC. These are huge semiconductor production giants. In Southeast Asia, there are actually a couple of big players located here. The Global Foundries, the Flectronics are in Singapore, but they're listed in Nasdaq. So even if you look at the Southeast Asian context, a lot of these semiconductor players are very niche. They have specific kinds of specific kind of roles in the entire value chain. We are talking about the likes of AEM. We specialize in testing, you know, and there are precision electronics players like UMS, Valutronics, Micromechanics. They are huge, series of players that is playing around in Southeast Asia. They are located here. They hired many people, and I will expect to see that they continue to do so in the coming years.
But we've also noted, Kian Soon, last night that Nasdaq was the market that didn't rally, right? Well, if you look at the S&P, you know, it's the 70th record high for the year. Just curious whether you think valuations when it comes to technology is a little bit too expensive and it's time to take some money off the table?
So if you look at the U.S. indices in 2021, look at it from a whole year context, I think all three indices have double-digit returns. It was a very, very good year for the United States in terms of the equities front. So people are a bit worried because if you look, in the coming year, in 2022, there are a couple of drivers that puts investors to be a bit of concern. A is the rising interest rate. B, valuations are actually going up and up, and people are looking at, you know, whether this will continue to be so. I think in the first half of 2022, equities still have a good run, but in the second half of 2022, investors will need to be careful and to consider if they want to really take some money off.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the three indices really double-digit, right? 19% to 27%, but the other end of the spectrum, the contrast is Hong Kong, Hang Seng Index, you know, down 15% year to date. But what's your take for the future and outlook for next year? You know, since time IPO, you know, some moral suasion from Beijing for Chinese companies to list in Hong Kong. Do you think its glory days are ahead?
I think Hong Kong has a tough year in 2021. One of the main reasons, if you look at Hang Seng Index, is quite tech-heavy. Mainly, you know, Tencent, Ali, is a huge component of Hang Seng Index, and the market regulatory regime in the middle of the year actually sent all these shares tumbling down, and it affected the Hang Seng Index significantly. If you look at it from a listing and IPO market, starting from the recent years, we see a flow of Nasdaq-listed or US-listed Chinese companies coming back to Hong Kong to list. Example, JD.com, Ali, and other significant tech players all have a dual listing back in Hong Kong. And we recently heard that DiDi will have a relisting as they delist in the United States and back to Hong Kong. in the coming year. So in terms of the IPO pipeline for tech companies in Hong Kong, it's definitely going to be significant. We're going to see this trend continuing in 2022. In a way, Hong Kong will be a key market for, continue to be a key market for all the tech players, especially the Chinese ones.
But do you think we should get into China tech? Because, you know, Didi came out with their numbers, but it wasn't really good, you know, 1.7% decline in the third quarter revenue. Would you go overweight on China tech?
So if you do a comparable, I think we need to compare companies of the same kind. Didi has the same business model with Uber, with Grab. So you need to do a comparable of how they perform. Generally, I think, you know, the business models of ferrying passengers from one point to another, I think it's very challenging as they are having rapid growth, but I think the profitability is always questionable. At the same time, if you start comparing Ali with Amazon, with the other e-commerce platform, then it gets interesting because Ali is actually trading at very attractive valuations, you know, relatively compared to its peers. So even if they are in different markets, I think investors have can basically do their, you know, fundamental research and check which one is of value to them.
And if I turn to Singapore, right, the government has announced a rash of cooling measures to bring the property prices, I guess, try to plateau it. Do you think these measures will be effective? And I'm just curious, what does this mean then for Singapore property stocks?
It is the, you know, money printing era, low interest rate environment as a result of the recent pandemic. And I think the cooling measures was put in place by the government basically to prevent property prices from further soaring. Especially if you look at even the HDB public housing prices was going up. And I think these measures was put in place prior to even, you know, the reopening of all the borders, because the expectations is once the foreigners are able to come, they are going to even buy up more properties in Singapore. And I think it will have an impact, definitely, as we've seen in previous measures. Previous measures always resulted in, you know, the volume coming down definitely in the coming years, as well as, you know, stabling the prices of property for the next couple of X months to years. I think in terms of companies that will be affected will be the property developers, as well as real estate agencies, because these kind of companies are very sensitive to volume in the real estate market.
So just to clarify, it's probably still not time to look at some of the property names like City Development or Wing Thai. I mean, even on a year-to-date basis, they are in negative territory. Clearly, this is a laggard sector, right, for 2021?
Definitely, they are affected because the pandemic has a huge impact on property developers, mainly because of labor crunch as well as, you know, the slowdown of projects and deliveries all have a significant impact on the property development sectors as well as the construction sectors in Singapore.
Yeah, no, Ken Soon, I just want to take a macro view now on Singapore. And you made a very interesting point with property as an analogy that, you know, Singapore's fortunes and its economy is very much linked to global economic movements, right? So with the question on central bank, right, with the Fed now taking a more hawkish stand, and we expect perhaps some other banks to also follow suit in 2022, how do you expect that to reflect and impact Singapore's economy? And in my particular attention is also to the banks, right, the financial sector in Singapore. What do you think that means for them?
Because of the macroeconomic policies, the country has taken higher interest rates in the United States, which we have heard, right, would come in 2022. And it's only a matter of when as well as how many times. I think Singapore central bank has limited options. Usually, you know, MAS will align the interest rates, you know, and when interest rates in the United States rise. I mean, it's expected Singapore will have a similar kind of trend. What does this imply? I think for financial institutions and banks, they definitely stand to gain in the interest rate environment, mainly because they have increasing margins and from their better spread from net interest income, etc. In terms of business, I think the implications business have to take note is rising financial costs. Businesses that, you know, have to take note that if their interest starts to increase, they must be able to repay this interest, and it's going to have a huge, you know, drain on their financial resources. So it will be a challenging year going forward as business has to cope with inflation, rising financial costs, as well as rising labor costs.
And one last question from us, right, Kian Soon, because when I look at the performance of the Singapore Straits Times Index, it's done really well, up 10% on a year-to-date basis. I think reflecting very much the anticipation of recovery and growth in the region. Do you think that Singapore can repeat this performance next year, though?
I definitely hope the STI will continue to, you know, improve on its performance. But I think whether it does or not, it depends on how the economic recovery is going to shape up in the coming year. You know, the reality is people will pay attention to see if manufacturing continues, as well as the energy sectors continue to be the stars and lead Singapore. And we will also pay attention to, you know, as the economy recovers, as the borders reopens, whether, you know, the hospitality, tourism, as well as travel industries, right, and transport industries will recover, because these are the current laggards and could be the next push in terms of what is expected in terms of coping with the pandemic in the coming year.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Lee Kian Soon, CEO of Astral Asset Management, saying that, hey, Singapore might still do pretty well.
Fingers crossed.
You know, it's going to be a bit of a challenge when you've already done, like, you've already increased by 10% on a year-to-date basis. So, you know, you're coming from a much higher base already.
I'm quite keen to see how emerging markets play out for next year, especially with the US being more hawkish, with interest rates coming through. I really am quite keen to see whether there will be any reallocation of people's portfolios or institutional portfolios, you know.
I think two things, one of which, of course, will be fund managers will be looking at laggards. That's a natural thing to do. But the laggards will be laggards unless it's followed by earnings growth, right?
Correct.
So you do need to see companies in emerging markets step up and see really there is expansion in terms of their growth.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting point, because we all know Malaysia is a laggard, right, in terms of its performance, you know, year to date, 10 years to date, so on and so forth.
Yes.
The question is whether the fundamentals are there, right, to be invested. Because as you say, maybe across Southeast Asia, we've seen improvements, you know, and maybe valuations are a bit more expensive relative to Malaysia. But are the fundamentals there in Malaysia?
Yeah, because in the last, I would say, 3-4 years, or even maybe the last 5-10 years, if you ask me, value plays haven't been very popular. Okay, it's all about the growth. So even though your valuations may seem unreasonable against the mean, against the market, and it's much higher, it seems that investors are willing to pay for growth. And that theme continues, I think, even in 2022.
Yeah.
So for us to shine here in Malaysia, we really need to have growth companies, because we have a lot of cheap companies, but not sexy.
I'm quite keen, you know, how the Malaysian companies play the growth story in Malaysia with a relatively small market.
It's got to be think beyond these shores.
For sure.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.